Hello, and welcome to Lecture 2 of the GRG. This is Lecture 2 out of 11. I trust you will all have made yourself, apprised yourself of a copy of the part 2 notes. The plan is to get through this part on vector sensors and functions in a bit under 3 lectures. May or may not manage that, but that's the plan. There's not a huge amount of hugely new stuff. Well, there is. Most of the stuff in this you probably have seen before in some form. Probably not in this form, and it might be a bit alien to you in the way we're approaching it. But the aim of this chapter is to get everyone onto the same page, really. So if you've seen some of this stuff before, good for you. If not, make sure that you run to keep up. As I mentioned last time, those of you with whose background includes a fair amount of purish maths might well find this deplorably informal. Those of you whose background hasn't included a fair amount of purish maths might find this rather bracing. Okay, so I don't think it's sort of in between your expectations. But as I also mentioned last time, this is the first of the two middle parts, which is mostly mathematical, allowing us to get back onto the physics in the last chapter. Because the payoff of this maths, because it is merely maths, the payoff is to allow us to talk about gravity in the physics of gravity in a very powerful way. Okay. Any questions about that? Or speculations or thoughts or feelings you wish to share? Okay, then let us proceed. So, as before, there are aims, objectives, fairly high level things. The aims are not very, there aren't very many aims to this section, because this is a fairly mechanical section in the sense that it's about technique. There are stuff you're going to be learning here about how to do certain types of maths. So you will use all this stuff later, but there aren't great physical insights awaiting you in the next three lectures, but quite a lot of objectives. So there's quite a lot of things you'll be able to do after this part. And as I said last time, the distinction between aims and objectives is aims are the point, objectives are the party tricks. The things that are fairly straightforwardly accessible is the point. Okay. This first section on linear algebra will be some sort of revision to most of you. Okay. You will have seen a lot of these things before at earlier stages in your education. If not, go back to your notes from previous years and make sure you are fully up to speed with them. One thing that I'm going to, I think otherwise isn't on the slide, but which is going to come up again and again, is the notion of linearity. And linearity in this context means a quite specific thing. Linearity in this context means, a function, f of x, say, but it can be any function you think of, is linear if and only if f of 2x is equal to 2, f of a times x is equal to a f of x. Okay, that's what linearity means in this context. It doesn't mean a straight line graph, although that's also referred to as a linear graph. It means if you multiply the argument by a scalar, the result is multiplied by a scalar as well. But that's not true of every function. For example, f of x equals x squared is not linear, because f of 2x is equal to 2x squared, which is equal to 4x squared, which is not equal to 2x squared, which would be, okay? So I'm labouring that point because that this term linear has possibly slightly different connotations in different areas. But returning to these points here about vector spaces, I'm going to come back again and again to this notion of a vector space. And a vector space is anything which satisfies these five properties. I'm going to go out and say a little bit more about those, but not too much more. Okay. The vectors that you are familiar with, pointy things, the things you learned about in school, those are an example of the elements of a vector space. And hence the name. They're the sort of prototype example of a vector space. You can add vectors together. This vector plus that vector gives another vector. Okay? You know that, right? So that's a property. There exists an element, a zero, and you add that zero to anything, and you get the thing you started with backwards. So A plus zero is A. There exists an identity element. Inverse. For every vector, there's a vector that points in the opposite direction. They add up to the identity. Multiplication. Any vector, you can double it, and you get another vector, which is the same direction and twice as long. And there is a, if you multiply that by one, you get the same vector. Nothing surprising here. It's distributive. That multiplication by reals is distributive. So there's nothing there that's surprising to you, I trust. Good. But I'm listing them because these are very general properties. And anything that refers, that satisfies those properties, is a vector space in the sense we're going to be talking about it. Okay? So hold on to that thought. I'm going to also assume that you know about these various things here. Linear independence, the idea of the dimensionality of a space, the idea that a basis set spans a space, the existence of components, blah, blah, blah. The Kronecker-Delft symbol, you may not have seen before. The Kronecker-Delft symbol is just a... I'm going to stop switching the back and forth, but the Kronecker-Delft symbol is delta ij is defined as being 1 if I equals j and 0 if I is not equal to j. That's the definition of the Kronecker-Delft. Positive definiteness just means that the inner product of two things is not negative. Okay, and some stuff about matrix algebra. The idea that matrices have an inverse, a trace, a determinant, and so on. Have you have come across these words before? Yeah. Okay. Anyone who's feeling uncertain at this point, you know, a quick trip to your last year's notes would be a good idea. I'm not going to depend on an intimate knowledge of these things or having them at the front of your head, but I am going to assume that you can look those up and remind yourself of the details when necessary. Are there any questions for that? Okay. So matrix algebra. You know what matrix algebra. Good. I'm sure you know all about matrix algebra. Okay, quick question. Consider the set of square n by n matrices. Is that a vector space? Hands up those who say yes. Hands up those who say no. Excellent. Right. Well, it is a vector space. You don't think of square matrices as vectors, but the square matrices satisfy all those axioms. You can multiply it by a scalar times a matrix. A square matrix is a square matrix. You can add two square matrices together and get a square matrix of the same rank. The all zeros matrix, the all zeros matrix can be added to any matrix to get the matrix you started off with. There exists an identity. There's a negative of every matrix, and matrix the addition, the multiplication addition are distributive like that. Therefore is important. Therefore, the set of square n by m matrices is a vector space. For each n, so 2x2 matrices and 3x3 matrices are not in the same space. You can't add two by two matrices and get a 3x3 matrix. They're in different spaces, but they're each separately vector spaces. Okay. Make sure you're comfortable with that notion. Okay. Now, I'm going to go on to talk about tensors, vectors, and one-forms. You probably have heard about tensors at some point before, but you've never really had to, you may have had to sort of wrangle with them a bit, but certainly I remember tensors being a slightly exotic thing that was happened in bits of continuum mechanics and I think some slightly exotic classical mechanics. It was a thing that was clearly quite powerful, slightly magic. Let's not think about it too much. Okay, that's fine. Now is where tensors really matter. So here is an important use of tensors, and so we're going to be talking about them a lot from now on. Tensors are before I put that up to the next slide, I'm going to say that tensors are let's see, so we're going to label, I don't want to put the next slide up quite yet because I want to have something up first. And I'm going to introduce tensors in a fairly axiomatic way, in a fairly mathematical way. I'm not going to give you examples and then say, oh, and now we call these tensors. I'm going to say these are the definitions of tensors. Because I think that although that can feel a bit mathematical as an approach, it does emphasize that tensors are fundamentally rather simple things. And that simply saying a tensor, each rank of tensors, I'm going to measure what rank is in a moment, is an element of a vector space. By just saying that, I've told you quite a lot about what tensors are. Okay. So a tensor, let's say a tensor T, will have a rank, I'll say what this means in a minute, Mn, so that will have a rank Mn, I'll see what the M and N are in a moment. And each MN, instead of MN tensors, is a vector space. What that means, you add two tensors of that rank together, you get another one of that rank, there's a zero element, and so on. And I'm going to give certain of these tensors, two sets of these tensors, a special name. So, and I always get these, never get these the right way, wrong way around. The set of 1, 0 tensors, we're going to call vectors. And the set of 0, 1 tensors, we're going to call one-forms. Now, this is a slightly unfortunate naming collision. These are both elements of a vector space. But it is usual to call this set of tensors, call them vectors. So in future, when I talk about vector space, I mean, or an element of a vector space, I mean the very general thing that obeys the axioms of a vector space. When I talk about vectors, I mean one of these. Okay. So the point is that there are, for each m and n, which are greater or equal to zero, there is a set of objects called tensors, which satisfy that each of those sets satisfy the axiom of a vector space. These are two examples of that set with special names. With those definitions, an MN tensor is a function which is linear in each argument, in the sense of which I mentioned it before, which takes M one forms and N vectors as arguments and map them to a real number. Okay? Question? Oh,
sorry, what does one form mean?
Right. Examples, so I'll come to examples shortly, because I'm going to stick with the abstract and your terminology to begin with, and then I'm going to bring in some examples. A question there.
Why are M one forms and N vectors and not M vectors and N one forms? Because the right is 1, 0 vector.
Because. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes. That does seem to be the wrong way around. It's not the wrong way around, but it does seem to be the wrong way around enough that it will cause confusion. And this is why I checked which way around I wrote this, because I always get it wrong. Okay, it doesn't actually matter hugely much, but well spotted. They do seem to be the wrong way around. Okay, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Okay, so the point is, it's a function. Now, a function is a machine which turns one thing into another. This function here is a machine which takes a number and gives you back its square. Okay, so it's a number which maps the real line to the real line. Okay, so that's a good way. It sounds like a slightly baby way of thinking about functions, but it's a really good way of thinking about functions. Functions are machines which take one or more things of one type and turn them into another. And tensors take one forms and vectors as input. You think of a machine that has holes in the top which are one form shaped or vector shaped. You turn the handle, and out comes a number. Not anything else, a number. Something in R, on the real line. Okay? And it's linear. So you put two of the of these things in, and the number you get out is twice what you started with. Okay. Any questions? So those are both really good questions. Any other questions about that? So really good questions, the answer to which is coming soon. Any other questions? Okay. So I think we want some pictures here. So here are some tensors. Now, there's a slightly informal notation I'm going to be using here. For a tensor, what example do I use? Okay. And I'm going to say, just to be consistent with this. Oh, thank you. Right. By the way, I'm going to write vectors typically with an over bar and one forms with a tilde. Okay? So I'll be fairly consistent about that. Not absolutely consistent, but fairly consistent about that. Okay? So what this is going to be a rather suggestive notation. So this tensor T is a 2-1 tensor. Or 1-2. Yes. It's a 2-1 tensor. Which means it has three arguments, two one-form shaped arguments and one vector shaped argument, and it turns that into a real number. So if we give that tensor three arguments, the answer is a real number. Okay, that's what I mean when I talk about that definition. So we're keeping this abstract at the moment. Examples are coming in a moment. But you can also partially apply things. So there, this here's a tensor. What question?
Sorry, I'm confused. Like, when you put the dots.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes, it's just this intended to suggest a sort of empty slot, a sort of hole, a machine with those three holes on the top. That's not a formal notation. That's just to guide the eye, as it were. So that's a 2-1 tensor, 2-1 form shaped tensor, 2-1 form shaped holes and one vector shaped hole. I put in one 1 form. What I have left is also a tensor. It's a thing which had one one-form shaped hole and one vector shaped hole. A one-form argument and a vector argument. That is, S is a 1-1 tensor. So by partially applying, by partially filling in the arguments to the tensor, we can turn one type of vector, a 2-1 tensor, into a 1-1 tensor in this example. We can do that more than once. He will fill in one of the one-form arguments, the vector argument, and we have something which has a single one-form argument. Now, something which has a single one-form argument is a 1-0 tensor, a vector. So we could write this as a vector. Okay. So we could give names to these other things. you know, but we don't. There's no need to give the other things, because the vectors and the one-forms are the things that we sort of have to give names to in order to create the definition you saw on the last slide. Okay. And similarly, if in this example we've talked about T omega sigma and fail to fill in the vector shaped argument, that would be a thing which has zero one-form argument, zero open one-form argument, and one vector argument. In other words, that is a one-form. Okay. Because all that one form means is that it's something which has it has zero one form arguments and one vector shaped argument, such as that. Okay. So, and say we're keeping this abstract at the moment. Examples come in a moment. The last point that's relevant here is a one form, as you recall, is a 0-1 tensor. It takes a single vector as argument and gives a number. A vector takes a single one-form as argument and gives a number. Now, there is nothing to say that those are the same number. These are just functions. They're functions which take this thing and turn it, which is a number. They don't have to be equal. We are always going to assume that they are equal. Okay? You can talk about this sort of stuff without that assumption. It makes things harder. We don't need extra hardness. So in this context, this will always be the case. We'll always constrain. This acts as a constraint on the functions that we allow here. So these functions, these tensor functions are not arbitrary in that sense. They'll always have that reciprocal property. And we'll sometimes write that with these angle brackets. It just means either of those things, and the only reason we use angle brackets sometimes is to just emphasize the symmetry of this. And that's true for all one-form and vector arguments in GR. Okay, that's a mathematician would not have that bit. As far as we're concerned, that's always going to be the case. How are we doing so far? Makes a lot more sense second time round. When you go through your notes afterwards, it will be illuminating. This is quite mathematical in the sense that we are laying on the definitions here. I think it's worth stressing that this definition is doing a lot of work. All the things that I've said, in the last 10 minutes or so, are just immediate consequences of this. A tensor is a function, it's linear, which takes these arguments and math to a real number. The only thing I've said that isn't an immediate consequence of that is this last point here, which is an extra. Okay? And all that depends on the statement that the tensors are elements of a vector space. So you get all those other properties being scooped up, being provided for free, in a sense, by that definition. Okay? So at this point, you do not have a picture. I don't expect you to have a picture of what tensors are yet, but you already know a lot about them. Okay, and that's the when you come back to think through it again a second time, that's where the clarity of a fairly axiomatic approach comes from. You already know a lot about them, even though you don't have a picture. Okay. So these definitions are doing a lot of work. Okay. And I'll mention just a bit of terminology. This is I will at this point fairly freely refer to contractions between vectors and one-forms. When I say the word contraction, I mean that. I mean applying a vector to a one-form. That's contracting the vector P, the vector A, and the one-form P. So when I say contraction, that's what I mean. There's more one can say about that, but we're not going to. Oh, question.
This one. So the Q, is that a one form or is that a vector?
It's a one form with a tilde over it.
Okay. that's also considered as an argument for M. So we consider as M, N. So that's M, M, and N.
If I'm not sure what you mean, that's a 2-1 tensor. Is telling us that there are 2-1 form arguments and one vector. Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that's an example of a 2-1 tensor, and T in each of the cases is a 2-1 tensor. But by partial application, we turn it into a 1-1 tensor and a 1-0 tensor. Which bracket?
Any brackets.
Yeah.
There are some dots.
Mm-hmm.
What do they mean?
The brackets here.
Yeah.
An important question. That's just picking up that we've said T is a function. So just like here, we're saying f of x is a function. So symbol brackets argument is a function, and that's why we're saying that that's the same notation. So we're saying the tensors are functions. They are machines which turn one thing into another. In this case, it's a real number into another real number. In this case, it's a function which turns a number of one forms of vectors into a real number. The dots.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a similar question there. That's just a fairly informal notation, just to sort of guide the eye, as it were, to say that this is a thing which has three arguments. These are. Remember, I said that the idea of a function as being a machine which has multiple holes in the top. You put things in the top, turn the handle, and out comes something else. So in this case, that tensor is a machine which has two one-form shaped arguments, one vector shaped argument. One, you put things in, turn the handle, out comes sausage.
Well, the two-form arguments are different.
Because one is a one-form shaped argument, and one is a vector shaped argument. And the notation there, an informal notation, intend to show that they're still empty. So we'll pre-fill in one of the arguments, and then we'll have two empty arguments. Say again.
The two behind are empty.
Yes, they're empty. There are two empty slots. Two empty slots.
Can you use a tensor as an argument?
Yes, you can, because remember that these are tensors as well. That's just a 1-0 tensor, and that's a 0-1 tensor. I think that's where this upside downness comes from. So a 1-0 tensor takes 0 vectors and 1-1 form as input, and a 0-1 tensor takes 1-1 form and 0-1 forms and one vector as arguments. So that's all the answer to the upside downness that appears to be present in the definition of tensors. Okay, and the question there. I'll go to you next, and then we'd better move on.
I can go to X and Z,
mutated
like 2-1 forms, and a vector.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong. That could be anything.
Yeah.
You can have 3-1 forms.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That's just an attempt to keep consistency between. In each case, it's sort of notionally the same tensor. Yeah. Here's a question. T is a 2-1 tensor because it has two slots, two holes, which are one form shaped, and one which is vector shaped. S, yes, true. So S with that, so you've got a machine, you've got one hole filled in. You then have two. Holes open, one form and one vector, and so S is a 1-1 tensor, because it S with that sort of hole filled in has one one form and one vector as argument. Okay. I should press on. So, a quick question. Given an arbitrary tensor, an arbitrary 1-1 tensor, T, what's the value of T 2P3A? How many folk would say it was, just quickly, would say it was 1, 2, 3, possible to say? Haven't given an answer yet? Have a chat to your neighbour. And what are the rank of the object 2T, what the rank of that object, and have a think, if S is a 0-2 tensor and SAB is 5, what is, have a chat through each of those questions. Okay, so given an arbitrary 1-1 tensor, folks. So given an arbitrary 1-1 tensor, what's the value of T 2P3A? We say it was 1, 2, 3, 4. Can't say. Okay, I think we didn't get everybody putting their hands up, but I'll insist on that later. It's that. Because since T is linear in each argument, T of 2P is 2 T of P. T of P3A is 3 times T of A. So 2 times 3 is 6. That's just because we said it's a tensor, therefore it's linear in each argument. Okay. What's the rank of the object 2 T P? Empty space. Anyone want to shout out? Yes, it takes one vector as argument. Yeah. So it's just a one form. And if S is a 0-2 tensor and SAB is 5 for a given A and B, what is SB of A? BA. The same two arguments the other way around. Who would say it was 5? Who would say it was minus 5? Who would say it was impossible to say? Who hadn't put the hand up yet? Who would say it was 5? Who would say it was minus 5? Who would say it was impossible to say? It's impossible to say. Because you don't know what the function is. I haven't said what the function is. It's a function which will turn two vectors into a number. By saying the tensor, I've told you that much, it will be the answer when both things are filled in as a number. But I've said nothing about what this machine does to the two vectors. Could be that it ignores the second argument. Okay? So if it is the case that SAB and SBA are equal for all A and B, then the tensor is known as symmetric. If it is the case that SAB is equal to minus SBA, and the tensor is known anti-symmetric. But most tensors, it's whatever it is. Okay. So we won't see many tensors which are sort of impossible to say. We'll mostly be dealing with symmetric or anti-symmetric tensors. But the distinction is important, and the fact that this machine does stuff to its to its arguments doesn't tell you what it does. Okay. Is anyone uncertain about that? You will have noticed I put these slides up generally after a little while after the fact in the lecture notes thing. I don't put the slides up beforehand, but after the part is finished, I put the slides up in the lecture notes folder on the Moodle. Oh, and just because it's absolute to say, I aspired to get the recordings, the audio recordings up before now. Hasn't happened. I aim to get this week, so they should be up and on. Okay. So I said that. Right. A last thing about vectors is the notion of the, and this is also just another definition. Examples coming in a moment. One last definition: the idea of the outer product. This circled cross. So given two tensors, or whatever rank you want, but let's in this example use two vectors. The outer product of these two vectors, this V cross W, is a tensor, which tells you a lot about it, which has two arguments, and the action of this outer product on those two arguments is the action of the first one on the first argument, the action of the second one on the second argument. Those are just real numbers multiplied together. Okay? So that times there is just an ordinary times. That's the times that you learnt about in primary school. Okay? That's not an exotic times. That is that's an exotic times. That's the outer product. That's just the real product. That's like apples, limes, oranges. Okay? I'm not going to mention outer products again for some weeks, but this is the place to introduce that term. Yeah, questions? Right. So, finally, some examples. This is an example of a vector. Nice simple vector. A 2D in the plane. It's a vector which has a direction and a length, and it's composed. The space is spanned by two basis vectors, E1 and E2. That's E1 and E2. And as you know, I'm stressing this just to reassure you that stuff you know is still true. That vector A can be broken down into components. It's some number, a real number, times one basis vector plus, because these are both vectors, that's a vector addition, plus some number times the other basis vector. Nothing exotic there. The only thing that's slightly exotic is the placement of these indexes, A1 and A2. Okay? And they are there because these are the components of a vector. We'll see why that annotation matters in a moment. So that's just a vector. Okay? And we'll also... we can write that at A equal to A1, and that's how you remember, I say in school, writing a column vector. Okay. We can also imagine in this context a one form being a row vector. Okay, and you're fairly familiar with the idea of one form of vectors turning into row vectors turning into column vectors and all that stuff. I'm in this context distinguishing vectors and one forms. Okay, these two things exist in different spaces. You have to do something to turn one of those into one of those. We can contract these. We can contract them very straightforwardly. The contraction of P and A, we will define as being P1, V2, 1, 3. I do apologize. U1, P2, 1. I'm going to be, yes, sorry, apologies for that. The components of one forms are labeled with that little thing, A1, A2, and that, as you know, is going to be P1, A1 plus P2, E2. And since these components are numbers, and that's just ordinary, simple numerical product, that is a number. In other words, the contraction of this one form and this vector is a number. And we've our choice here is our choice to define the contraction in this way. Now, as you can see here, we ask, okay, that's P applied to A. What's A applied to P? Well, we can't really use our experience of row vectors and column vectors to answer that question. So we're just going to say, oh, but of course we don't have to, because we know it's P applied to A. Okay? So the we define that to be the thing that we've just defined here, the contraction. Okay? So that's an example of all the things that were mentioned up to this point. These are both elements of a vector space. You know, you can add two column vectors together and get a column vector. You can add two row vectors together and get a row vector, etc., etc. All the other actions apply. We have defined a contraction, and so on. We can also define a hierarchy. Oh, a question. In this case, that is because when you learn about vectors and column vectors and row vectors and stuff in school, you are told a row vector is just a column vector on its side. You're told there's a very straightforward way of going from one to the other. In this case, we could do that, but we're keeping them as separate things. So we haven't. I haven't said how you get. How you get so this I have said nothing about how you get that from that. Okay, so that's just a completely different thing. Okay, because I've chosen not to. Okay, so the difference is that they are just the difference is we have abstained from the thing that we learned about in school, which is how to go from one to the other. So, which implicitly said that the two things are the same sort of thing. So, we are holding back from that and saying these are separate things. But I've linked them by this process of defining the contraction between them. And I can also define a tensor. Which in this example is a square matrix. And now I can apply a tensor to a vector and get etc. I mean, in the usual things. So the point here is that this tensor is definable in this way. It's a thing which takes a single one form, which could be, we could left apply a row matrix to this, and we can right apply a column matrix to this. And if we, P1, P2, TA1, A2, we could left apply the row vector, right apply the column vector, and get a number. So this works. That is equal to is a thing on the real line. If we partially apply it, if we give this tensor, this 1-1 tensor, just one thing, what we get is another vector, which is a thing which takes a one form as argument and gives a number. And similarly, if we left applied a one form, we'd get also get another one form, which is a thing which takes a vector as argument and so on. So the thing, this stuff, row vectors, column vectors, matrices, you're very familiar with. It has been an example of three different types of tensors, which you didn't realise when you learned about them in school. Okay, so these ideas are not the terminology is exotic, and we're going to use the power of that terminology and the power of those various definitions fairly freely hereafter. But the things that are examples of them are not exotic. They're things you are familiar with. And another point here is that I'm going to I want you to end up with, and this will matter a lot in the next part, I want you to hold on to the idea of a vector as being two things. I want you to hold on to the idea that it's a pointy thing, okay? Because that's a good thing to hold on to. You, that's a clear idea in your head, and you can hold on to that as a notion, to hold on to that thought. I also want to stress that you can, that you must be also be able to think of, I've lost an example of it, to think of vectors as functions. Think of a vector as a function which takes a one form as argument and turns it a number. So you know, you have these two pictures in your head swapping in and out as we go on, because they're both right. Okay? Okay. I jumped ahead of myself. So this, if we left apply a one form to a tensor, we get a thing which is another row vector. So it's another one form. In this example, okay. One form. In general, we'll also talk about fields. In this context, a field is a. And any mathematicians in the audience, you might want to close your ears just now. A field is a thing which takes different values over the space. So a scalar field is something which takes different values in a, say, the 3D space of this room. So the pressure in the room is a 3D is a scalar field. At different points of the room, the air pressure is different. It's just a number. A vector field is something which takes different vector values at different points in the space. So the magnetic field of the Earth is a vector field. At different points in the 3D space, it takes different values. And at each of those points, it has a vector value. It has the magnetic field of the Earth has a direction and a strength. Okay, that's what a field means in this context. And we can then go on to visualize these things in a straightforward way. Vectors, there's nothing complicated about visualizing a vector. It's a pointy thing, okay? But we're going to also, visualize one forms. I'm saying this because, you know, to help you, yeah, I need to thought rather than something we can actually calculate with. We're going to visualize one forms as, well, in 2D, lines. They have a direction. This has a direction and a length. This set of planes has a direction, and it has a sort of pitch. Okay, so there's a magnitude to this. So that's in this picture. That's a one form which is the same direction but has a higher magnitude. They're closer together. Why closer together? Because away in this picture, so this is not another example of tensors. We can imagine the contraction of a vector in a one form in this picture is by laying the vector across the one forms and saying this vector. So it goes, crosses two lines. It goes from one, cross, and it gives an answer of two. So that the contraction of that one form and that vector is two. The contraction of this one form, one, two, three, four, is four. So that the contraction of that the same vector with the larger one form gives a different number.
Can you tell the direction of a one form without using a vector? Because it could be either
vector. It could be, yes. That's not a mathematically very precise picture. So I think that, when thinking of vectors, it's useful to have this notion of a point of an arrow. When you're trying to get your things straight in your head. When I talk about one form, it's useful to have a picture like that. Maybe you could colour one side of them, one side rather than the other.
Does it make sense if a vector is somewhere in between two one
forms? Yes. In sort of a fairly obvious way. I mean, I think we don't want to overstress the precision of this. That's just a picture that's useful. And also it means that things like like this, makes sense. So there's a one-form field. Time to stop. There's a one-form field, like the gradient lines on a map. The gradient, it turns out to be modelable as a one-form. In this case, the uphill has a direction, and the closer these lines are together, the steeper the slope is. And if you move it like that, or like that, or like that, in each case you've crossed the same number of grid lines, of contour lines, sorry. And so you've risen the same amount of you've climbed the same distance. So in that sense, the contraction of those three different vectors with the one-form field produces the same number. So when I talk of vectors, think of pointy things. When I talk of a one-form field, think of the gradient lines on a map, contour lines on a map. And with that picture, I'll let you go. We should. I think we've done not too badly in getting just about the right distance through this part. I'll see you again on Friday, I think, not in this room. Okay? All the other GR lectures are in this room.